Morning. Nice to be home. Had a trip for a few days to British Columbia to see a friend. Beautiful, beautiful part of the world. It's on the coast, a little north of Vancouver. Pretty remarkable where the town is there on the coastline, beautiful town. And just kind of looking around, and then you see the woodland, you know, a lot of trees, obviously, and water, and you see the woodland going back into the hills. And I asked my friend, how far does that go before you reach any, like, a city or a big town or something? He said, about 600 miles. It's amazing that this... to me, but that's so, 600 miles of forest. And up there, they're dealing with the emergent threat of wildfires too. It's not quite on the scale of what's been happening in California, but there they're under the same. That's starting to really grow as a risk. Anyway. As I say, nice to return home. I'm going to bring up a koan from the Book of Equanimity. So we have these several koan collections in the way that the koan practice is taken in this lineage. Right, so typically it begins in koan study here is there are 200 miscellaneous koans, which was a system that Koryo Roshi, Maizumi Roshi's lay Rinzai teacher used. So in the Rinzai tradition, there are several versions of those, that first early collection. It varies somewhat between lineages. And then after that, the examination or the exploration moves on to the Mumon Kon, the 48 koans therein, and then from there on to the Blue Cliff Record and Book of Equanimity come next. And it goes on from there, but these two collections of Blue Cliff Record and Book of Equanimity is often Blue Cliff particularly held up as the primary collection and the most vaunted collection, perhaps a Blue Cliff, 100 cases. And the Book of Equanimity is almost like siblings. You know, the Book of Equanimity was used typically more in the Soto school and the Blue Cliff record in the Rinzai school. And some of the cases overlap. There's, 20 or so cases overlap. And these are all collected around the same time in China. It's that interesting development where what was, like in a lot of ancient cultures, more of an oral tradition perhaps to begin. Of course, the Chinese are very diligent about writing things down and keeping records. So those early cases of the old masters were soon collected and written down, and became a standard to study and a standard to reach and to match. And of course, you don't have to do koan study to practice Zen. In this lineage, it's not required. And there are strengths and shadows to any method that is brought in as any practice. Even in the early creation of the Blue Cliff record, it became it was a big hit. It went viral in China, in the Zen communities, and then was like held up as like this is it, and then gets almost like a biblical quality, to the book, very very highly prized and regarded, so much so that perhaps a successor of a compiler, or maybe first generation or second generation down from the compiling of a Blue Cliff record, the teacher burned the wood blocks for making it, for printing it. So already he saw that the book had become an impediment towards inquiry, that it had missed the point that people were quoting these cases around and taking that on as Zen. So it's like burned the printing blocks, wood blocks. Makes me think of Chitsuroro Shiro's woodcuts, those beautiful shirts that he's done, you know, that old tradition of woodcuts and printing. It's been with us. So there's a strength and a shadow to these compilations. What's most important, of course, is the koan of one's own experience, the koans of one's own life as it's arranged, as it's perceived and experienced. That is the important koan. If case koans are helpful, as they are for many people, in pointing to and illumining that, in bringing doubt to a head, and then they're useful, then that study is useful. If it's not, then it's not. There are other approaches. Koans are sometimes, and Master Hakuin, a great exemplar of koan study, one of the greats in the Rinzai school, said koans are like using a wedge to knock out a wedge. You know, so using something, you're bringing something in, bringing something else in order to remove something else. Using a block to knock out a block. And this case is a case, I can find it, sorry. Yeah, case 80. Ryuge passes the chin rest. Preface: a great sound is rarely heard, a great vessel matures slowly. In the hurly-burly of 100 chatterings, he plays the fool, patiently letting time pass for thousands of years. Tell me, what kind of person is this? In the main case, attention, Ryuge asked Shuibi, what is the meaning of the ancestors coming from the west? Shuibi said, go and get the chin rest for me. Ryuge brought the chin rest for Shuibi, and Shuibi then treated him to a blow. Ryuge remarked, hit me if you wish, but there's still no meaning to the ancestors coming from the west. Later, Ryuge asked Rinzai, what's the meaning of the ancestors coming from the west? Rinzai said, go get the cushion for me. Ryuge brought the cushion to Rinzai, and Rinzai treated him to a blow. Ryuge remarked, hit me if you wish, but there's still no meaning to the ancestors coming from the west. Later still, when Ryuge was living in a temple, a monk said, Osho, in former times you asked Shuibi and Rinzai about the meaning of the coming of the ancestor. Did they both clarify it or not? Ryuge replied, they clarified it all right, but there's still no meaning to the ancestors coming from the west. So this koan is one of those that's also shared with the Blue Cliff record, but there's a different emphasis and perhaps a different appreciation between the two versions. The Blue Cliff record part omits the latter part of the koan, where the student goes and asks Ryuge about what happened. So that latter part is omitted. So in the Blue Cliff, we would have Ryuge visiting Shuibi and Great Master Rinzai and asking the same question and receiving the same, pretty much the same response, and then himself answering in the same way. So if we try and illumine this a little, it's with these cases, of course it's well, it's essential, perhaps, to allow oneself to, or at least to try, to shift and to put yourself in the perspective of the protagonists, to take on the scene, like looking at a script for a play, starting to, you know, as an actor would read a part and see who is this character, what are they? You know, cons are more difficult when we just approach these things with our own more of a defined perspective of how do I understand this? How do I see what's going on? And often that I is the block. That's a problem. Rather than asking, how do I understand this? Better to ask, how does Ryuge understand this? How does Shuibi understand this? How does Rinzai understand this? If we find the inquiry that really understands that these characters in the page and this one here are all one together and not separate, and not fundamentally or intrinsically not separate, then that is a good standpoint. Same human life, 1,000 years ago. Circumstances a little different, but mostly the same. Two arms, two legs. Cushions and mats, in this case, we don't use chin rests, right? That's historically, perhaps it's still in some places, training places in Japan, I'm not sure if it still exists. Perhaps they do. Yeah, she said they do. And so a chin rest is for sitting late and sitting through the night. When you're falling asleep, you could get a stand with a chin rest on and then put it in front of your legs there and then rest your chin, and that way you could continue sitting with your head supported. I don't think we'd sell many of those in the store. Although it could be like an interesting, you know, an artifact, like
this, it's kind of an icon.
This one belonged to so and so, you know, you could probably talk it up a little bit, but that's what a chin rest was, so or still is. So Zen school, of course, you know, often or strongly emphasizes long sitting, or a lot of zazen. Here, you know, there's a fair amount of zazen compared to what, you know, but compared to some places are strict, some places have a fuller schedule, you know, some places have a lighter schedule. The important thing is how we realize the schedule that we're doing, whether it's like Hosan or the middle of session. You know, how we are matching the forms, how we are matching the present experience. It's easy to fall into vaunting more extreme methods of practice or harder practice. That's something that sometimes become captivated with. You know, I certainly felt that way for, you know, a long period of time. It's many years since I personally sat all night, but I felt that was something to do at one point. I remember sitting with my friend Veront. We sat all night here one time, and I was pretty sure, because it was good timing, because Roshi was going to go that next day. He was going to go down to the desert to his parents for some reason. There was some project down there he was going to do. So he was only going to be around in the morning, and then he was going to leave. And we were sitting we were going to sit all night. And part of it was thinking, should be a little bit of a lighter day the next day. And we did. I remember sitting all night, and then, you know, somebody comes out and does a wake-up bell, and you're like, yes, you know, I'm done it, and then service happens and all of that. And then I remember going to work practice, and Roshi had, like, cancelled. He wasn't going to go down. And instead we worked on the rock wall where we parked the cars. Like that wall, just did that all day. And it's like one of the most horrible days of my life. And then it's like doing that after not sleeping at all, like the night before, you know. It's kind of funny now, but I remember it wasn't at the time. So, you know, sometimes we can have these ideas that are ascribed to more stringent or a tougher practice. And with all these things, there's a strength and a shadow to that. There's certainly a great strength to long sitting and being able to go beyond our comfort zone. You know, but if again, if we hold that up and say, this is the right way of doing things, whenever we fall into that identity with a way, this is Zen, that's not Zen, Soto, Rinzai, Koan, Chikan Taza, Brett, what? If ever we find a nest in there and gain an identity from it, then it's of no use. Then it's of no use. So Ryuge comes to Shuibe's place and asks what was the stock question of the day. You know, it's like an approaching question or a testing question. This comes up a lot in the old record. And asking, what is the meaning of the ancestors coming from the West? So this is referring to the founder in China, Bodhidharma. You know, Buddhism had been existent in China before Bodhidharma's appearance, but he's credited in the record of really bringing the Zen flavor from India to China. The Zen flavor, the little difference between, of course, there are differences between the various lineages and traditions of Buddhism. So you're talking about Bodhidharma here, coming from the West, India, to the East. What was the meaning? So that's a stock question. You could ask, what is the meaning of Zen? That could have been the question. Or, what is the meaning of this life? What is the meaning of the Dharma? This is like a direct question to the teacher. To bring up a question, to start a dialogue. And the record's really replete with a lot of instances of this happening. And one had to have, it seems, you know, a certain amount of courage to do that, right? Because often in these cases, as back in these times, the responses were often physical. You know, I like the way it says here, Shuibi treated him to a blow, like that's a nice treat. You know, that's treated him to a blow. Like that. Okay, so what is the meaning coming from the West? But so we could dress this up as a, can be delivered as a question in order to raise some depth in the conversation. But really for all of us that encounter and then delve into spiritual inquiry or Zen inquiry, that question is really the motivator, however that's articulated and understood in one's mind or heart. And what is the meaning? What is the meaning? We don't have to take on the ancestor coming from the West. I remember Tenshin Roshi's successor, Kaigen Roshi, was telling me in a conversation that he had said to somebody, look, I want you to take all of these questions that you have and distill them down into one question. Distill all these questions down into one question and ask that question. So it can function in that way too. We might have all kinds of inquiry or questions about this and that, some things that seem unclear. But where possible, coming up against the, if there is, perhaps it's not for you, but if there is one real point of angst, one real question, one thing of doubt, one thing of what that is, then it really helps to clarify that. Clarify the question. It's hard to clarify the answer when you don't know what the question is. And much more important is this, is like really bring that doubt up. That's how koan functions too, is to give doubt a direction. It's a container for inquiry, where you can bring that down and distill it into one question. Maybe it's hard to articulate that question, but even physically or in the body, you lean into, in Zazen, into that question, into inquiry. Sometimes it functions as just, what is this? What is this? And so that Zazen can be a body of that inquiry. Because with this long sitting, sometimes we can fall into a autopilot mode, like a cruise control, right? Where you're used to sitting, you come into the same seat, the bell's the same, the room's the same, characters change a little bit, but for the most part it's the same. And we can fall into a place where you just, like, it's like the day job. You kind of show up to Zazen in that way, where you just sit. It's not particularly difficult. You go past the initial difficulties, but it's not particularly rewarding. Like the initial easier insights have come. So then it's just a sit-in. Sometimes that is just somewhat of a coasting. Okay, this is fine, but it's not really perhaps making most efficient use of the urgent time that we do have. If that is noticed in one's practice of Zazen, then really use that noticing as a chance to reboot and just re-enter into that mind-body inquiry into this mystery, into this experience. Look for meaning. Or you can look for meaning. But rather looking at what this self is. If you don't really look, then that question, then it's not really brought to the front. This is rather a passive acceptance of environment inside and out, but no real energy brought to dissolving any barriers, the ways that we hold ourselves separate. So I encourage everyone in that sense to really make use of the time that we do sit. We don't have to sit 8-10 hours a day with chin rests. In some ways, you could look at it and you say, well, if you reach the point of falling asleep to the point where you got to rest your head on and snooze, is that better than using a shorter amount of time for Zazen and being all in with attention, and then when you're tired, go to bed? Which is better, which is worse? So Ryuge asks that question, brings it up to test out the teacher, and the teacher says, get me the chin rest. And in response, treats him to a blow, or hits him with a chin rest. One would hope or imagine it was just a bit of a rap, rather than like smashing him over the head with it or something. Well, no, because he answers, so he can't have hit him that hard. Treated him to a blow. Ryuge remarked, hit me if you wish, but there's still no meaning to the ancestors coming from the West. So this is where we really have to, or the invitation is to step into Ryuge's skin. He asks the question, what is the meaning? What is the meaning? And goes and asks an accomplished Zen master, a teacher, what is the meaning? And the teacher hits him. And he says, yeah, okay, you've hit me, but there's no meaning. That asks each one of us, what is he bringing up? What is being raised here? Do we go see a teacher with, how often do we see somebody where we have a question, a deep question, and you go and you ask a question, And then you receive an answer and you're like, oh, I'm done. Thanks. Zen doesn't function in that way. Practice doesn't function in that way. Whereas, you know, here's, you know, we throw up softballs and like questions and, oh, here's your answer. Oh, great. Got that down now. This is dealing with questions that are a lifetime study for a human being. And you know, again, the record is replete with, this is not an unusual answer to be struck. But why struck? Why struck? Of course, we bring up the first ancestor here, and it says that when Bodhidharma talked of Zen or made a definition for Zen, he said Zen is an intimate teaching, not dependent on words and letters, pointing directly at the mind, realizing awakeness, a realizing Buddha. Not dependent on words and letters. What is the meaning? He doesn't answer with words. Sometimes words are used, sometimes they're appropriate. But Shribi's device is to first not even just hit him with something, but have him go get it and bring it to him first. How would that make us feel, you know? Of course, this kind of thing you can't get away with in 21st century China, 21st century California. You know, this is inviting some litigation. you can't really... Right, we don't do it that way anymore. But he has him go get that, and there's a strike. Why? You know, I come up against these things like beginning practice and reading of these. Like, what is all this hitting and shouting? What is contained in that? What is the meaning in that? What is Shribi's effort in expressing the Dharma, expressing his teaching? What is his effort? What is he pointing at with the strike of the chin rest? And is that device... Go on.
So he gets struck, but gives an answer. For me, that points to, you know, clarify, say more of your question. Because your question isn't getting to the nub, the Watteau of the koan. So for me, that's one need, And why is it that Dragon Wizard Man, didn't answer with a shout or a smack himself? So, I mean, and then that could just go back and forth. But it, to me, that just, it's, the teacher is asking for clarification. I mean, that's just myself putting myself in that koan. Need to say more. There's something lacking in the response. But that's why they're written that way.
Anyone else?
Hit brings up an intimate experience. And that's the answer. That's his answer to the questioner. What's happening? How do you experience?
And then there's that.
Then there's that.
Encouragement.
What meaning do you make of this?
Encouragement what?
Encouragement, figure it out.
Anyone else?
This seems kind of, I guess, stubborn, or the fact that he's asking a question that he already has an answer to himself.
Yeah.
Which is, there is no meaning, so I'm surely the teacher knew that it was not a sincere question.
Maybe, yeah.
And then he asks it again.
Yeah. I remember going in to see Tenshin Roshi with working on koans, and I had a response ready for a koan. And I thought, so this, I'm going to say this. Then he's 90% chance he's going to say that. And then I'm going to say this. Boom. And I had the trap set. And I remember... I won't say which call and what answer it was, but I remember I went in and I said something and Roshi said, no. And I was like, okay.
Ding-a-ding-a-ding.
So,
are you sure?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, dangerous to go in with your preconceived kind of, you got your plan, so perhaps that's something. Anyone else want to throw a hat in the ring? Okay, but this is, you know, it's interesting, see? So it's like, and this is the nature of koan too. It's like, rather than looking for just the one answer that might satisfy this, it's like looking at it, like, what does that mean? What is that meaning? What is being pointed out? What is trying to be raised up? What is the teacher trying to do? What is this, yeah, what is the student's position? You map these things out and it's like, it can really help develop one's expression and understanding and moving between these positions. But he's not satisfied, Ryuge, whether he pre-plotted or not. He says, hit me if you like. There's no meaning. And off he goes to see Master Rinzai. But, you know, it's interesting that with this question, if his motivation is only to, you know, protect his own kind of understanding or show that, it's a long journey to go on. I don't know how far Master Rinzai's place was from Master Shuibe's, but I would imagine it involved quite a journey. So there's something driving Ryuge's inquiry. Like, what is this meaning? What is the meaning that can't be satisfied by seeing Master Shuibe? Like, hit me all you want. That's great. Thanks for that. That doesn't reach it. There's no meaning. And off he goes to see Master Rinzai. Same thing. Master Rinzai in indulgent mood here, for by his usual, if you read the cases of Master Rinzai, get me the cushion. I mean, that's like light by his, get me the cushion filled with rocks. That might have been more kind of typical or something. But it's asked the same question. You know, this is our focus with the case. That question, what is the meaning? Same thing. Get me the cushion. You must think, oh, here we go, right? Same thing. Now, this is where, in the other version, in the Blue Cliff, it stops at that point. But we go on after Master Rinzai strikes him and he says the same thing that he said to Master Shuibe. Hit me if you wish. There's still no meaning in the ancestors coming from the West. Later, when Ryuge was living at a temple, a monk asked, as a teacher, I think, like at a temple where he went on, I think he's the successor of Tozan. Osho, in former times, you asked Shuibe and Rinzai about the meaning of the coming of the ancestor. Did they both clarify it or not? Ryuge replied, they clarified it all right. They clarified it. They weren't remiss. They didn't answer wrongly. So why this comment, why this turnaround? All these years later, inquiring into meaning. Now that's the work of each one of us. It really is in Zen. You know, we can look for meaning in strange places, or well, not in strange places, but in places where that might provide easier answers. You know, why is this like this? Well, because this happened, that happened, and this happened. And now, so now this has happened. And now I'm like this. And fill in the meaning based on events, circumstances, conditioned patterns, etc., etc., to explain meaning. But that is not Ryuge's lifetime of practice. his lifetime of practice is to look into this meaning that cannot be satisfied with words, cushions, chin rests, explanations, books, whatever else. It has to come from his own realization and awakening. No matter, see 100 teachers in China, backwards and forwards in time, there's no way to get that from another. Nobody can unlock that. Whatever one's own inquiry is, has to be satisfied by each one of us. And we don't settle for meanings that can be explained on the with shallow answers. This because of this. This explains this. But rather assuaging or reaching that deeper inquiry. That deeper what is the meaning? What is this? Is this really one's home? Is this awakening? Is this a Buddha's realization? Or is there something still to be made clear? Is there something more to do? Is there something to be clarified? Ryuge, one way or another, no matter how much traveling or zazen, he, for him, clarifies this. And realizes the mind ground that Shuibei and Rinzai realized. They clarified it all right. They weren't imposters. They did what they could. They answered this way. They clarified it all right, but there's still no meaning to the ancestors coming from the West. Isn't that an intriguing way to wrap Ryuge's response? There's still no meaning. But there is no meaning that needs meaning. Or there's no meaning that feels like lack. There's no meaning that it shows up as confusion. There's no meaning that needs an answer. But this is a little, well, this is certainly different. I still say there's no meaning. And the monks that hear this story ask him, you know, what does that do? Does that bring up doubt for the questioner, Ryuge? What is the difference with his realization of no meaning in coming from the West as a mature practitioner to the person who was hit with the chin rest? What is the difference? That's our practice. Looking into this meaning or no meaning. If we go back again to Bodhidharma, the first ancestor, when the Emperor Wu asked him, what is the highest meaning of the holy truths? And he said, vast emptiness, no holiness. It's the same, no meaning. Not something that can be given one to another. Not a thing. It's hard, perhaps, to be alive and comfortable in no meaning. You know, often we have something that we rely on. Some structure, some construction, somewhere to put the feet, somewhere to stand, some kind of nest, some identity, something. A little something to avoid the dark, right, of no meaning. But this arrival at no meaning, Ryuge raises up, that Rinzai and Shuibei also express, the no meaning of Master Bodhidharma. That's this life. That's this same experience. What is the meaning? There's a difference between looking outside for meaning or trying to find something. A big difference between that journey or that looking, that inquiry that works through the meanings that don't reach it, the meanings that don't satisfy. Looking, all looking through, throwing out, throwing out, throwing out, throwing out, throwing out, throwing out, throwing out. Meaning, 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 meaning. Delving all ever more intimately into this great meaning. You know, and I'd be remiss to say something extra there. It's just for it's for each person. That's where these koans function as wedges to drive out wedges. If there's this arouses some doubt, or what is then that meaning? It helps to point it back, to ask in one's own body, in one's own heart and mind, what is the meaning? What is no meaning? Okay. Yeah, please.
I just going to say, it helps me to ask the question, what's the activity of making meaning? What am I doing when I'm making meaning? And that puts me in that place of being able to swim through the whole mud of meaning or no meaning. I'm doing something outside myself.
Hmm.
Meaning, we make meaning, we manufacture something, and that's what comes before that.
Mm-hmm.
For me. So
yeah, no, I appreciate that. You know, we bring the meaning. It's a potluck.
I bring. That's really all I can say. Yeah.
Bring your meaning.
Yeah, bring your meaning.
Does anyone like to share something, bring any, you know, comment or anything you'd like to say on this case? Yeah.
I was going to say the phrase that comes to mind is one I always heard drilled into me, was to not knowing is most intimate.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat with that a lot. Just, and my mind that wants to know, why did that person do that? Why am I acting this way? And it's cause for my own internal inquiry. And what comes to mind again is a story that was shared with me that I guess back in the old days at UCLA, everyone had a koan. They would sit in line with their little paper. And then the person would be behind him, like peering over, oh, what are they working on? Just my own experience with working with koans is that it's not one answer. It's just, there's many different ways. There's 360, and I would get one and have to give one answer. Go back out, have to give another answer. So there's just different ways to keep shifting perspective of looking at what I needed to see. And to not know is, that's tricky. That's a tricky one. I all want to know. Thinking mind wants to know.
Anyone else?
Like sometimes, like, yeah, like come across that wanting to know, and sometimes I like push that farther for myself and say, well, how, if I'm like really want to know, how could I do that?
Yeah.
And what's interesting is sometimes there are subjects where I get to a point where I realize I actually don't want to know, and then it's like a. Or like sometimes in, when I like, I'll sometimes challenge my friends to that, like someone is like assuming something about another person or an event, I'll sort of go like, well, why, like if you really want to know, look into it or like ask this person. And sometimes I'll get the response of like, no, I'm not going to do that. Like, mm-hmm. I don't, and that's sort of like, I don't really want to know because I'm, you know, maybe scared I'll find what I'm, or I'll find something
that I would rather not find. Mm-hmm. And we often have we have a deep impulse to find a way. So we may approach with a way of discerning knowledge and trying to add to that. And we bring that to Zen, to practice knowing, like an inquiry of knowing to know stuff. And then we run into the block with that, and then we can flip that, and then not knowing becomes something. So then we're doing not knowing. And then not knowing becomes a thing, which is about as useless a thing as you can have. Is the thing of not knowing. You know, there's time for knowing. There's things that we need to know or can know. But it's this identity or relying on one way that's an issue. And that can be the way of knowing, the way of not knowing. We fall into an identity or a way in which we describe or experience life and practice that way, that's a problem. Because there's no way. And that's, you know, but we can certainly practice over and over this faith in the seat of our own inquiry, using knowing, not knowing, using all of these things, but not looking for it somewhere else, not looking for it in the mouth of another or in the experience of another. But trusting this, trusting in this life, trusting in this inquiry. But it really requires that shift that goes beyond that ever compelling focus on a narrow identified sense of me that puts others on the outside and things in their place. That's what needs to be seen through. That's what needs to be dissolved. So wherever you look, it's you. It's this one. Okay, well, thank you for listening, and thank you for taking care of the place while I was away, and we'll finish.